This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up today, the implementation began on one of President Trump's initial executive orders, the so-called Mexico City policy, which will prevent U.S. tax dollars from funding foreign organizations that perform or promote abortion. Just what will the impact of this new policy be? Tennessee Congresswoman Dianne Black, chairman of the House Budget Committee, is here with the answer. Also, President Trump gave his first commencement address as president at Liberty University over the weekend. I was on Fox News discussing it this morning, and this afternoon I'll discuss the president's remarks with Nicholas Hamilton, correspondent for Campus Reform and a 2017 Liberty graduate. And FRC's director for our Center for Religious Liberty, Travis Weber, will be here with a wrap-up of the World Summit in Defense of Persecuted Christians, and also some good news for a Christian printer in Kentucky. All that and more coming up on this edition of Washington Watch, so don't step away from that radio. If you happen to miss anything, though, it's all archived at TonyPerkins.com, and you can catch it later tonight. The website, as I said, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right, President Trump's administration is not only reinstating the Mexico City policy, which was suspended by former pro-abortion President Barack Obama, they are expanding the pro-life policy from covering $600 million in federal expenditures to $8.8 billion in federal expenditures. Here to discuss this significant move is Congresswoman Dianne Black. She represents Tennessee's 6th Congressional District. She's the chairman of the House Budget Committee. She also serves on the Pro-Life Caucus. Congresswoman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. It's actually Marsha Blackburn. Did you have on the phone?
Oh, and well, somebody gave me the wrong information. Well, Marsha,
and you know what? It's too good people to get confused, because Dianne and I each do a great job representing the pro-life issue.
You absolutely do, and you have been spearheading a special investigation into the activities of Planned Parenthood, presented a report to Congress, which has really moved the administration on taking this issue on. So glad to have you on.
That's exactly right.
Glad to have you on. Let's talk. Let's talk about the significance of this. You've been in Congress for a while. This is a big deal.
It is a really big deal, and I have to tell you, we are so pleased that President Trump has taken this step. As you said, we did have the Select Investigative Panel last year, and we found out what was happening with the big abortion. And so what we did was to recommend language that was included in our passage of the American Health Care Act. And that was to just basically say, if you're doing big abortion, then you're not going to get Title X funds. And with the expanded Mexico City policy, what you have seen President Trump do is keep a promise, first of all. And after he came in to office, he said he was going to review this policy. And, of course, those of us that vice-chaired his transition, I was one of those vice-chairs, and we looked at what was taking place with Mexico City policy and with those who receive our foreign aid funds and U.S. aid funds. And what the president decided to do is to go in and tweak this language so that if you're doing women's health, we're all for you. We're going to make certain that you have the resources that you need. And the American taxpayer wants to do that. But if you are in abortion services and providing abortion services, then no, you're not going to get that money. And there are several different entities. I know so many people that work through the NGOs and missional outreach time and again see those that are doing help, but they're also doing abortion services. And the goal was to kind of put that bright line between those and to say, if you're on this side of the line with women's health services, great. But if you're on the other side with abortion services, no, you're not going to see any taxpayer funds coming your way.
I think this is very significant. This goes back to Ronald Reagan. He first implemented this policy, the Mexico City policy, in 1984. But Marcia, this reinstatement under President Trump, as we talked about, expands this far beyond what Ronald Reagan put in place so that it covers the Department of Defense and humanitarian spending. It not only covers the State Department, but I mean, this is a very broad approach to recognizing the sanctity of human life in our federal expenditures when it comes to these foreign NGOs.
Well, you're exactly right, because, Tony, we are explicit when something is important to us. And to enter into this with such an explicit statement and have this expanded policy, it sends a message to our allies that providing for life and recognizing the sanctity of life is important to the U.S. taxpayer. Thereby, our policy will be in favor of life, both home and abroad.
And this, obviously, Marcia, as you were very involved in the Trump campaign, you had campaigned for him. This was an issue that was important to many of the supporters. In fact, in a post-election poll, right in the heels of the election, 59% of Trump-Pence voters said they voted for them based upon their endorsement, their embracing of the party's platform on life and religious liberty. And so, I mean, I think you have to be encouraged, because I know a lot of voters are, that he's actually doing what he said he was going to do.
Well, that's precisely right. And people want him to stand for religious freedom, and they want him to stand for life. And these are foundational elements. And, you know, during the news clip that preceded my coming on, there was a conversation about University of New Mexico and Southwest Women's Options. And I was just out there recently to do a press conference with one of my colleagues on the campus at UNM. And, of course, there were problems with how UNM and Southwest Women's Options, their big abortion provider, were in a relationship as it pertains to the transactions and the selling or trafficking in the fetal body part. And those state legislators out there, Congressman Pierce, who represents that, the Coalition for Life out there, they're doing a great job in giving voice to this policy that you are seeing become the overriding policy in Congress and in the White House, which is the Stance for Life. So it is an encouraging change.
It certainly is. It's very encouraging. My guest, Congresswoman Marcia Blackburn of Tennessee's 7th Congressional District, a champion on the life issue on Capitol Hill. And we're discussing a new policy. This was one of the first executive orders signed by President Trump when he took office in January, and now it's being implemented. Secretary of State Tillerson rolling this out today. So, Marcia, when you look at this, and the administration has been very clear, this is not going to affect the delivery of humanitarian services whatsoever. It's simply going to say we're not going to fund organizations that choose to do abortions. We're going to fund it to provide this funding to other organizations that uphold our same view of the sanctity of human life. What is going to be the message that this sends globally when people see that we have a new orientation when it comes to human life here in Washington?
I think the clarity that it sends is for these entities in different countries who have tried to couple abortion services and women and children's health services, is that they're going to have to do away with those abortion services, or they're not going to get any of this foreign aid that goes into providing health and wellness services for women and children. And they're just going to know that the qualifications for getting that money are going to be steeper. The accountability for the utilization of those funds is going to be more accurate, and that what they may have looked at as just being a quote-unquote pipeline or continued funding is not necessarily going to be there. That taxpayers are tired of that, and they want to make certain that the funds are being used in the appropriate way. And the appropriate way with this administration and with the Republican-led House and Senate is to be sure that it is going to be a policy that stands with life.
Well, folks, I'm going to say this is a big deal. For the president to follow through on this commitment, even more so than what was discussed on the campaign trail. This is wide, this is sweeping in what he has rolled out today, his administration has rolled out. My guest, Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, represents the 7th Congressional District of Tennessee. She served as the chairperson of the House Select Investigative Panel on Planned Parenthood. For about a year, they looked into the alleged criminal activity of Planned Parenthood. In fact, made some recommendations that Congress is considering and some they've moved upon. Let me switch gears just a bit, Marsha, to the issue of the repeal and replace of Obamacare, which had the defunding of Planned Parenthood. That's over in the Senate, passed the House. What do you think is going to happen from here?
I think the Senate is organizing themselves and beginning to take up work on it. And I find it so interesting. There are some that think the Senate may just go to conference on the House bill. And if that were to happen, I think that would be wonderful. In my opinion, it would be a little bit unexpected. But the Senate knows that there was a commitment made both by the House and Senate and also by the administration to get Obamacare off the books and to straighten out the situation with the health insurance marketplace, to straighten out the delivery issues that have developed because the networks have narrowed so completely that it is difficult for people to get access to care. And they have an insurance card, but it's too expensive to use the insurance. And then the access when they do need something is just so limited that it makes that very difficult for them. Mm-hmm. So the Senate realizes this. My hope is that our colleagues across the aisle are going to realize the insurance marketplace is imploding. We have areas like in Tennessee where you've got a third of the counties that only have one insurance provider, and by this time next year, another third of the counties, that would be two-thirds of the state, would be with only one provider. And that is just not an option. It's certainly not sustainable. And we have found out with these federalized essential benefits, it's too expensive to afford. So I look for the Senate to take it up.
Yeah, that is an unworkable situation. Very quickly, we're up against a break, but if it comes back from the Senate without the removal of funding for Planned Parenthood, which your task force select committee recommended, do you think the House approves it without that stripping of funding for Planned Parenthood?
I think it would be very difficult to approve it because there was agreement following what we found. And by the way, we made 15 criminal referrals, and some of those are on General Sessions' desk now. And I think people realize that there needs to be that division between women's health and abortion services, and they like the language that we placed into that bill, and I look forward to seeing that continue.
I think you're right. Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, thanks so much for joining us today.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
All right. All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to be talking with a Liberty graduate, 2017 graduate, about the president's speech this weekend. Don't go away. We're back after this.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I love to lead people to Jesus Christ as a layman outside the walls of the church. Have you ever wondered why God put such a priority on the sharing of your faith from Genesis to Revelation? Before he placed you in your mother's womb, he set you apart to be his spokesman. He appointed you as his ambassador and admonished you to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world and to love your neighbors as much as you love yourself, with a warning that if you don't, if you deny him before man, he'll deny you before his Father. That's heavy. Why is the sharing your faith so critical? Because it compels you to know him more so you can share him more effectively. That the sharing of your faith may become effective for the full knowledge of every good thing that is in you for the sake of Christ. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everybody you're with today closer to Jesus. If you want to know how easy that is, go to ROTW.com.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. President Trump delivered his first commencement address since taking office at America's largest Christian university. Speaking at Liberty University in Lynchburg on Saturday, Trump challenged the class of 2017 to never, ever give up and to never stop fighting for what you believe in. It was, quite frankly, as a graduate of Liberty University, going back a few years, I thought it was a great speech. Not only a great day for the graduates of 2017, but a great day for the university and how far it has come since Dr. Jerry Falwell Sr. founded the university. Well, with us now to discuss the president's address there on Saturday is one of Saturday's graduates, Nicholas Hamilton. He's also a correspondent for Campus Reform, and he was there at the commencement ceremony. Nicholas, congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. How are you today?
I'm quite well, thank you. Big crowd there. And of course, the president drew attention to that, as he likes to often. About 50,000 people, I understand, on campus?
There were 50,000 people on campus to listen. Everything went well. It was organized. Everyone was very happy to be there. We were proud to have a sitting president speak at the graduation.
As you should. Let me ask you this. His comments, very strong, I thought, on the issue of religious liberty and standing up to the bullies, to the critics who want to oppose those who want to live according to their faith.
Listen, he came, he knew what he had to do, and he did exactly that. Commencement services are not time to push political platforms. He took this as an opportunity to invest in the students, to look into their future and say, hey, here's what I've done to be successful, and I want to tell you how to do that as well. People left encouraged. They were very happy with his speech. And overall, I think every student and graduate was very pleased to hear what he had to say.
Yeah, that's a good point, Nicholas. You know, some in the press were wanting him to talk about Comey and other political events, and he didn't do that. He appropriately used the platform to celebrate the accomplishments that the graduates, yourself included, had that milestone that you had reached. But then I think appropriately, I mean, the world's largest evangelical university is pumping out, thousands of graduates. And I think, in fact, it was a message. I don't know if you were at the convocation back in the fall when I spoke, but his message was not much different than mine.
No, it was not. Listen, he took this, like I said, he took this opportunity and did well. We had Elizabeth Warren at the University of Massachusetts, and she wanted to take that opportunity to push her political agenda. It wasn't appropriate, and if I had been a student there, I would have been very disappointed. But listen, Donald Trump did exactly what he needed to. He said, when someone says that something's impossible, that's the green light to keep going. He didn't back down from talking about his faith, and he didn't back down from talking about what was important to our future as graduates. But aren't we, very proud to be Liberty alum today?
Well, Nicholas, one of the statements he made that really captured my attention was, he said, we will always stand up for the right of all Americans, talking about his administration, to pray to God and to follow his teachings. America is beginning a new chapter. And given what we've seen the last 8 years under the religious hostility of Barack Obama, I mean, that is music to my ears.
It is music to my ears as well. We've done a lot on campus in terms of religious liberty. And to hear that from a sitting president, I can't tell you how happy that makes me. You know, we've seen the president do some really great things. And one of the things that I'm most proud to see is the people that he has surrounded himself with, mm-hmm. including yourself. He's been very happy to take counsel from you, from Jerry Falwell Jr., the president of Liberty University, Vice President Mike Pence, and other great religious leaders around the country. And, you know, we can be at peace with that, knowing that he's been willing to surround himself with those people and know that the Lord has a voice in his life through leaders like yourself.
Well, Nicholas, what I have been encouraged by is that, as he came, spoke on campus a little over a year ago, won the Republican primary, went on to win the election in large part because of evangelical support. He's not backed away from that support. In fact, he's embraced that community, which, quite frankly, is uncommon for a politician. They tend to move away. He's actually moving toward.
He is moving toward, and we can see by his executive order last week or in the past few weeks that he is making steps in the right direction, seeking counsel for yourself and others to limit the Johnson Amendment's hold that it has on churches, on universities, Christian universities like our alma mater, and churches in itself, that they, now churches do not have to fear the IRS, tightening down on them for using political speech from the pulpit and preaching a moral message. And I can't tell you how happy I am. The executive order, it could have gone a little bit farther, and there's a long road ahead of us and many more things we can do, but it was absolutely a step in the right direction.
So, Nicholas Hamilton, with degree in hand, what's next for you?
Well, sir, the Lord's blessed me with some fantastic opportunities, and I have to give him all the glory for that. Politics is looking really great for me, and the Lord, like I said, the Lord's opened doors, advertising, public relations, communications. I graduated from LU with a degree in professional communication, speech communications, so we will see. I'm waiting on the Lord to open that right door, but I have full faith that he will do that.
Well, as the president told you on Saturday, follow your convictions. It means you must be willing to face criticism from those who lack the courage to do what's right. Nicholas, thanks so much for being with us.
You're very welcome, sir. Thank you for having me.
All right, Nicholas Hamilton, a Liberty graduate, 2017. I was a Liberty graduate in 1992, 25 years ago. And Pat Buchanan was actually the commencement speaker when I graduated. He was warming up for the 1992 Republican convention. I think it was in Houston that year. All right. When we come back, we're going to get a wrap-up from Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Freedom here at the Liberty, the Family Research Council, over the summit that was held Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. We'll talk with him and some good news out of Kentucky when we come back. So don't go away. We're back after this.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, it looks like we're going to start the week off in a positive note. We have European markets, Asia markets, and here in the U.S. markets looking like a lot of positive news. We've gotten some good earnings numbers. The dollar is a little weaker, but it looks like the precious metals, gold and platinum particularly, are going to start off very strong this week, primarily due to some good news coming out of China. China has renewed a pledge that they've made to really bolster infrastructure in their country. And that's going to be very good for copper, silver, platinum, gold, and so on. So we'll have to wait and see. We get Empire State manufacturing numbers already out this week, and they turned negative, which was very unexpected. But you know what? I think it's really just a New York Fed area thing. I wouldn't be surprised if the Philadelphia Fed numbers coming out here later in the week will also turn downward as well. So I think it's more a regional thing as opposed to something that we can look at as an indication of where we are headed in the markets in general. We get industrial production out also this week, and we get e-commerce retail sales numbers. That'll be interesting. And we're going to see another EIA, and we're going to pay a little bit more attention to the oil inventory numbers coming out. And of course, Fed President James Bullard is due to speak on Friday. We'll see if that brings any excitement or some pullback in the market.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
All right, this is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. By the way, pastors, just a little over a week left, actually a week from this week, a week from Wednesday, we will start our annual Watchman on the Wall pastors briefing in Washington, D.C. Still a few spots, not many, but a few. You can still register. Go to tonyperkins.com. We're going to have a great, great lineup of speakers. You can read more about it. Go to tonyperkins.com. All right, the first ever World Summit in Defense of Persecuted Christians concluded Saturday in Washington, D.C. The summit was hosted by the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. Our own Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Liberty, was an advisor to the event. He was there, spoke on one of the panels, and he's going to help us kind of wrap things up. I know he was on Friday talking about it, but it was a big, big event, drawing a lot of attention to an issue that we've spoken about quite frequently on this program. And as we've often related it, the persecution of Christians abroad to our domestic policy here in America, he has some good news out of Kentucky as well. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, first, how did the summit end up on Saturday?
Yeah, I think it ended on a really encouraging note. This event was just downright fantastic in a number of ways, just very encouraging, very uplifting, really a kind of a pivotal event that should spur all of us looking forward to band together with those who are persecuted for following Jesus Christ around the world. And, you know, that is the same solidarity that we find with Christians here at home who are facing discrimination and religious freedom violations. And these are the same, it's the same source, the enemy attacking our faith and seeking to stamp out Christianity wherever it is. That's in Western Europe, the United States, and in places where the persecution is more visible.
Well, and one thing that you pointed out in our discussions about this, I was not there, but you were there representing us, these individuals, and we've seen the same thing here domestically, and I've seen it with those I've interacted with as well abroad, that there was not a sense of victimhood among them, but there was a sense of great, you know, really what we read in the New Testament, where Jesus said, "Count it all joy when you're worthy to suffer persecution." And that's the kind of the sense that you get from these individuals, that they're joyful. I mean, obviously this is challenging, but they're joyful that they're counted worthy to suffer for the name of Jesus Christ.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really a testimony to the power of God, the presence of the Holy Spirit. It came across so powerfully. And obviously, we're seeking to protect freedom, protect religious freedom, but when the violations come, their response is to rely on God, not shrink away. And this is really where Christians here in the United States need to hear these stories and hear this message, because we see these people standing joyfully in the face of torture, of violence, and they respond with love and reliance on God. We can then come back to our own lives and say, wow, okay, I can stand easily and be called names and be discriminated against and, you know, and be hated because I'm a Christian. It's kind of not really a big deal. And we can rely on God's power as we do that. And in that way, it's a real encouragement and inspiration to us.
But isn't also a part, Travis, in the interaction I've had with these individuals and those, again, domestically that have been targeted for their faith, like the printer you're going to tell us about in a moment, the fact that their faith becomes more than just kind of an accessory to life. It's not just an accessory. It's more of who they are. I mean, their faith is tried, it's tested, it's gone through the refiner's fire, and it's who they are. And therefore, life takes on a whole new meaning when your faith is that central to who you are and what you do.
Absolutely, and I think that's why the faith of so many of these people is so strong. Fire Chief Cochran from Atlanta was one of the speakers at the event, and his story is so powerful. And that's evident in his life, too. He has grown closer to God through the experience of standing for God despite being fired unjustly. And that's the real key here, is we can see the similarity between that and the different forms of persecution around the world and say, this is encouraging to hold fast to the truth for as long as we are on this earth.
And that's why I think you when you read historically of the church, and even today, I mean, in China and other places where there's, well, in the Middle East too, where there's outright persecution, the church is actually growing. It's expanding. The gospel is still transforming, in fact, in an accelerated fashion, because I think it's in a pure, more less adulterated form, and so it's more meaningful to people.
That's very true, and it is amazing. It's a testimony to nothing but the power of God. You know, I mean, we hear stories from North Korea, people miraculously coming to faith there, then going back, bringing the faith back into the country, you know, at risk of death. And if you're following God, when you hear the gospel of Jesus Christ and the message of Jesus in North Korea, and you choose to follow him, there's nothing but the power and call of God that will sustain a person in that situation.
And as you said, when you hear these stories and you see people living out their faith in those ways, it challenges us to face not knives and guns, but and swords, but words, maybe, you know, government hostility in some cases, but certainly not to the degree that we see in the Middle East. Travis, we're up against a break. Can you hold on and join me in the next segment for a few moments?
Absolutely.
I want to talk about the good news coming out of Kentucky with the T-shirt printer. Good news, folks, of someone who stood for their faith. And, you know, we've got to be willing to stand. And oftentimes when we stand, we prevail. We go from victory unto victory. All right, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch on the other side of this break.
We at the American Family Association believe men should not be allowed to use women's restrooms or dressing rooms. Yet the policy of Target allows just that. Do you agree that this policy poses danger to our women and children? Then sign the Boycott Target Pledge. When you do, you're saying, until Target makes the safety of women and children a priority, I'll shop elsewhere. The good news is the boycott is making a big difference. A Target financial report indicates a dramatic drop in their sales and earnings. And a Wall Street Journal article clearly shows that Target CEO Brian Cornell regrets his company's policy announcement welcoming men to use women's restrooms and dressing rooms. We're convinced that together we can stop this insanity before more women and children become victims. Sign the pledge today and tell others about the boycott. Go to afa.net/target. That's afa.net/target.
Join Frank Turek, Richard Land, Norman Geisler, Greg Kokel, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Early bird pricing ends August 1st. Visit ses.edu for details.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Lives are ruined one compromise at a time. It starts with one little lie, one little look, one little anything that doesn't seem so bad. But compromise is one step onto a slip and slide that leads to another compromise and yet another. And finally, spiritual callousness and death. Compromise is yielding to temptation, to feed a lust of any kind. But lust never gets full. It's an insatiable, bottomless pit that leads to the bottomless pit. Jesus is the only cure to our lust. He's the uttermost Savior and sanctifier. Oh, how we need Him. Never be content to compromise. Instead, let us draw near to Jesus. Let us press on into Him and press on in holy living. Let us chase after the author and finisher of our faith, zealous of His good works through us. No compromise, only Christ alone. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Everybody, this is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, talking with Travis Weber, FRC's director for the center of our the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. He was giving us an update, a kind of a wrap up on the World Summit in Defense of Persecuted Christians that came to a close on Saturday in Washington, and now. He's got some good news regarding a Christian printer in Kentucky. Travis, thanks for sticking around.
Absolutely, Tony.
All right, tell our listeners the outcome there in the Bluegrass State.
Yeah, so this is a case involving a small business, a print shop called Hands On Originals. They custom print different items, and the owner is a believer, and he adheres and follows his faith in how he runs his business. So this leads him to not print for a variety of things which may violate his faith. Now, one of those was a request to print for a gay pride parade that came to his shop recently, and he said, look, I can't, it'll violate my faith to do that, but here, you can go to such and such business down the road. Well, they weren't happy with that, and they sued him using a local rights ordinance and an administrative tribunal commission which ruled against him. Subsequently, however, state courts, the trial court level and the Court of Appeals now recently has ruled for the small business, for the print shop owner, saying, look, he is just running his business according to his faith, engaging in expression as he sees fit, and that's no violation of this ordinance at issue.
So this case could go to the Supreme Court there in Kentucky, this Kentucky Supreme Court. Is there a chance that it will end up there?
There's a chance. And the way this and the other cases that we've seen involving these small businesses and same-sex wedding scenarios have occurred is they've gone through the state court systems and reached the state Supreme Court. They could go to the U.S. Supreme Court after that. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court has currently not taken one yet. But at some point, it's going to have to decide one of these cases. Now, we don't know, how far this one is going to go. The court here just said the non-discrimination law is not violated because he's just engaging in expression. It did not reach the question of what constitutional rights would protect him here. And that's the real question in a lot of these cases, which the U.S. Supreme Court eventually will have to rule on.
So, Travis, what might this decision communicate to other courts that would be taking up similar cases?
I think it'll communicate the fact that these businesses are just trying to express themselves freely in accordance to the ideals and beliefs of the owners, as any American living their life, running their business, would want to do. I mean, this is really an American idea of freedom, that we give people the autonomy to live their lives, and there's no legitimate reason to force them to be involved in processes which violate their conscience. When a court looks at this, they say, oh, okay, you know, here the small business was just expressing itself, and there's no violation of the ordinance based on that. That's kind of really the principle and framework, which is a good one for these, and we hope other courts look at this and adopt a similar approach.
I mean, there appears to be evidence that would suggest that these individuals that have gone to these Christian printers, bakers, florists, are intentionally doing so because there are other options out there. They don't have to go to these particular businesses that are overtly identified as Christian. It's almost as if they're trying to provoke this confrontation.
I think that has occurred in some cases. You know, and I'm not sure specifically what happened here, but even so, when you have a scenario like this, there are others who are willing to fulfill the order. Why? That's the best of all worlds for everyone involved. This person is not forced to violate their conscience. And then you go to a business which is happy to fulfill the order as opposed to being forced to do it against their will. I don't know why someone, wouldn't want to work with a company who supports what they're doing. So really there's no good reason to be forcing these people into something they disagree with like this.
Travis Weber, as always, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, folks, I mean, look. Here's another case where someone decided to stand up for their faith. They prevailed. Now, that doesn't always happen, but does that matter? Does it matter if you're not going to win? Should that be the calculation that you go through based to determine whether or not you're going to take a stand? Well, look, I want to go back to, we've got a few minutes left here, and I'm going to open up the phone lines here in a moment. Go back to President Trump's address at Liberty University. And throughout, if you didn't see it, it's like 30 minutes long. It's on the White House website, or you could read the transcript either way. But throughout, woven throughout, two themes. One, standing in the face of your critics. But two, he repeatedly challenges, as we were talking about earlier with Nicholas, challenging the graduates to stand for their faith. And I go back to one of his closing comments. Following your convictions means you must be willing to face criticism from those who lack the courage to do what's right. And he says, America is better when people put their faith into action. As long as I'm your president, no one is ever going to stop you from practicing your faith or from preaching what's in your heart. And see, our understanding and the founder's understanding and the historical understanding of religious freedom is the ability to live your life in all aspects according to your faith. So here's what I want to ask you. Those of you who have graduates coming up that are maybe they've already graduated, it's graduation time, are you challenging them? And if so, how are you challenging them to live out their faith? 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. You know, we are increasingly in a culture that is hostile to the Christian faith, to the Orthodox Christian faith, to the, I say Orthodox from a standpoint of true to Scripture. I mean, we have kind of seen people redefine Christianity. Of course, that goes all the way back to Paul and his letters to the early churches, about the false teachers and the false apostles and prophets. And so it was back then, it's still today. People wanting to water down the gospel of Jesus Christ, and when you speak truth, it offends. How are you challenging your graduate to stand for truth in the culture as they go forth? 866-372-7234. You know, a couple of things, possibilities, especially for those graduating from high school, getting ready to head off to college. You know, to go to maybe Summit Ministry, some of these other worldview academies that are out there, and let them spend a week or two there before they head off to the college campus so that they can be equipped to defend the faith. And of course, it goes back even more than that. I mean, I think in our churches, we need to do a better job of teaching our children not just Bible stories, but biblical truths, equipping them not just to defend the faith when they get to the college campus, but to the high school campus, the junior high campus. 866-372-7234. What are you doing to equip your graduate, or how are you challenging them to stand true to the faith? Let's go to Georgia, where Deborah is on the line. Deborah, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Just great. My son just graduated Saturday night, and he has been homeschooled since third grade, and we've always challenged him to express his faith and stand up for his faith, and that's what his senior thesis was about, was the early church government of the early government of the church and how it was organized. And I just wanted to say, you know, he stands up for his faith, and I'm so proud of him. And
As you should be. And thank you for your sacrifice and commitment to homeschool. My wife is homeschooled, and I say my wife because I've been the principal. She's been the teacher, all of our children. And I guess we've done the same. Our big kind of challenge is to when we launched our two oldest off onto the college campuses that they knew how to pick their fights, because there's so many challenges that they'll face to that truth, and they just need to know, you know, as I said, you got some of these professors that wouldn't know the truth if it ran over them. And anyway, Deborah, thank you so much for the call, and congratulations to you, to your son as well. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Texas, where Bonnie is on the line. Bonnie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for taking my call today. I was thinking about the graduates and what we should encourage them to do. And then I thought, as a grandmother, we should encourage all Christians to do this. I realize that the left can be our enemies at times, very often, but shouldn't we also look at the left as our harvest field? They're unbelievers, and many of them don't know Christ. So shouldn't we also, at the same time as viewing them as enemies, at some points, we should also love them to Christ?
Without question. And that's, you know, if you're a frequent listener, you've probably heard me say this, but as Christians, the reason we stand up and defend the faith is not to win an argument, but rather it's to win a heart and mind, the hearts and minds of those that oppose us. And you say, well, how can you defend the faith and argue with them and win them over? Well, I'm not saying you are. You don't have to be argumentative to defend the faith. I mean, if you catch me on any particular TV show, you'll notice that I'm not. I never, even in debates, I don't get angry. I'm not angry about it. I'm a Christian, and I'm not angry. And most Christians are not angry. We just need to know how to defend the faith. In fact, I was on Fox News this morning. Of course, it was a very friendly discussion about the president's comments at Liberty University. But even in the debates, I don't get angry about it. I think we have to stand for the truth, because in order to attract people to the gospel, they have to see it as something we place a value on, a value that's reflected in the fact that we know it, we live it, and we're willing to defend it. I mean, look at the early church. Let's just take the disciples, of the 11 remaining after Judas was exposed, all but one died as martyrs. They gave their life for something they believed so deeply in. And as a result, people were moved by the fact that they were so devoted to this. And Paul, who defended the faith and promoted the gospel and all the things that he went through, the stonings, the beatings, the riots. I mean, this guy, man, shipwrecked. I wouldn't travel with this guy. He had all kinds of issues. But look at his testimony, because he was willing to take on the critics and the opponents, and he won many of them over. So absolutely, Bonnie, you're absolutely correct. And that's what Ephesians chapter 4 talks about. When we speak the truth in love, we're speaking from a redemptive heart. The reason that we defend the gospel, the reason that we don't sit back and hide in the shadows, or we don't go silent when people are mocking God or denying the truth, the reason we do that is because we believe in it. And we want them to come to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ as well, and have what Jesus described as not just life, but abundant life. And that only comes by Jesus, that I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. And so that truth, we're the ambassadors, we're the carriers, we're the guardians of that truth. And if we don't believe it enough to stand up and defend it, that sends a message to people that we place no value in it. And I think that's the big challenge in the church in America today. It's not that we're too, you know, hard about the gospel. I think we're too soft. We don't care enough about it. We don't place a high enough value on the truth of God to, A, live it out in our own lives, but B, to defend it when it's under attack, both in word and in deed. So, yes, Bonnie, we should never look at our opponents as enemies. And I don't call them enemies. I call them opponents. They are opponents of the faith. But they're not enemies. They are being held captive by the enemy. And our mission, if you choose to accept it, is to take the truth that will set them free, that they too might experience that abundant life. So my message to the graduates, not unlike Donald Trump's message, the president, is to be bold, to be courageous, and live out your faith. That's why I wrote the book, No Fear. In fact, it's still available. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Great gift for graduates, by the way. And that is that we live with no fear of man, but rather a holy reverence for God. And with that, you can stand in the face of your critics and actually have joy. You can have joy because it's not about you. It's not about winning an argument, not about winning a debate. It's about winning the hearts and minds of people with the transforming truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Well, folks, thanks for being with us. I hope you'll join us again tomorrow. Lord willing, I'll be back, and I hope you will as well. Until then, I'll leave you with the words of that Apostle Paul, who wrote in Ephesians 6, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.